This episode of Victims and Villains is brought to you by our Horrific Hope 2023 sponsors, Diabolical DVD, Fierce Literature, and Convicted Printing. For more information on these fine businesses, check the links in the descriptions below. And if you're interested in becoming a sponsor yourself, links are in the descriptions below. The packages and the tiers we go, you guys can also go to victimsandvillains.net/horrific hope. For more information, we hope you guys enjoy this podcast. Hey, you're listening to the Victims and Villains podcast, the only podcast to discuss mental health through pop culture. My name's Captain Nostalgia, and on this episode, it is kind of a live episode. Back in September, thanks to our friends over at the Alamo Draft House, where we host our very own film festival, Horrific Hope. And just a side note, if you are a filmmaker or a screenwriter and want to submit your screenplays, short films, or feature films into our upcoming festival, go to victimsandvillains.net/horrific hope or go to filmfreeway.com/horrific hope. Film festival, all of those links are going to be in the descriptions below. But thanks to our friend Andy Geyer, we got a chance to sit down with the stylist filmmaker Jill Gavargazian. And we've sat down with her last year and we talked all about the stylist and her career as a short filmmaker. We're caught up with her to talk about what life has been like since the success of the stylist and future projects she's working on, and much more. We hope you guys enjoy this episode. And as always, if you or someone you know is currently struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please click the links in the show notes below. You are not alone. This is the reason we make this content. And if you guys haven't seen The Stylist yet, Jill's film, I highly encourage you guys to check it out. It's now streaming on Shudder, and it is a great depiction of the importance of mental health and community. We hope you guys enjoy this conversation. If you or someone you know is listening to this podcast right now and you're struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, we encourage you guys to please reach out. This is the heartbeat of why we do what we do. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, and as of this recording, there are 132 suicides that take place each and every day on American soil. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope. That resource is going to be right in the description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this. There you'll find resources that include the National Suicide Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. You can also text HELP to 741-741. We also have a plethora of other resources, including churches, getting connected with counselors, LGBT resources like the Trevor Project, and also Veteran Hotline as well. Please, if you hear nothing else in the show, understand that you, yes, you listening to this right now, have value and worth. We get it. Suicide, depression, mental health, these are hard topics, and the stigma around them doesn't make it any easier. But please consider the resources right in the descriptions below, wherever you guys are listening, because, once again, you have value and you have worth. So please stay with us. If you've been listening to our podcast for longer than 2 years, you probably know that I don't need to give you a reason to go check out The Stylist. And I'm here with its writer and director, Jill Gavargazian. Gavargazian. I will edit that out. How are you doing?
Great. I'm excited to be out here at Lost Weekend.
I'm excited to be here with you. We did like a whole like hour-long podcast that I'm not going to retalk about because that's in the past. I will link it in the show notes below, but it has been 2 years since we last had you on the podcast, and in that 2 years we've had a pandemic come and go. The Stylist has now hit Blu-ray. It's on streaming services like Arrow and Shudder. How does it feel to have something that you worked on so long kind of end up on these like notable services?
It's awesome. And honestly, I'm sitting here realizing, like, has it really been 2 years since we talked on the podcast? Oh my God. And it's insane to realize it was just a few days ago that it was the anniversary of our world premiere at the virtual Fantastic Fest that year, you know, in 2020. It's freaking awesome. And it was really exciting to go on Shudder back in May because it kind of was like a whole new release for the movie. Like a whole new gang of people discovered it and still are, I think.
I think I'm, now that you like just like mentioned that fact, I think I like 2020 has got like my years mixed up. So it's like it's like we had like a decade and then like 2020 happened and it's like 2 decades. So it was last year, because I remember like I'd have like people like messaging me because I'm like the movie guy in a lot of my circles, and they'd be like, give me a good movie to watch. And I'm like, well, what kind of things are you in the mood for? Are you looking for something that's like a little bit more like character driven that has some slasher elements, it's got a good emotional core, you should check out The Stylist.
Well, hell yeah. That's my goal of how it would be described, actually.
Yeah, it's like, and so, like, I had, like, a lot of friends that would come back to me over, like, the last year and just be like, I'm really glad you recommended this movie. It just went through some, like, really, like, weird places that I wasn't expecting, but, like, it also, like, satisfied my inner slasher gore addiction that I now have.
That's what I was hoping, because I went, like, the whole idea started from me thinking, how is there not already like a really over the top hairstylist slasher movie? And then when it came down to making it, I realized I wanted to go more of like a psychological route, but still have, when we dealt with the kills, we went full out slasher, disgusting as possible, because I love gore, always been a fan of it.
Well, so with that, you're also featured in the new documentary that I won't really talk about, I guess, is the Legacy of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and prominently featured in the trailer for the film. I broke my no trailer rule once you sent me the link. But, you know, talking specifically about, like, you know, I'm surprised that it hasn't been seen. I'm surprised it hasn't been done. Yeah, you look at, like, the notable icons of the slashers, and you have Freddy, you have Jason, you have Chucky, you have all of the, but they're all guys, it's all things. And like, yes, they've tried to bring females into the Scream route, and it's very polarizing with people. And what was some of this, like a challenge of taking a mostly male dominated genre and saying we're going to introduce a female, and not just a female, but a broken female, and we're going to explain this brokenness.
Well, it's interesting. I just never really thought about how she was different. I just knew I wanted to make a hairstylist that killed people, and that she'd and that it'd be a female, no question. I feel like as filmmakers or artists, we naturally make things we more so understand. So I feel like a lot of my characters in films that I make are women just for that reason alone. I don't know. It was weird, cause I was trying to draw, like, ride this line of it not being too much of a slasher. But now that it's years past, I'd be like, I would love to bring her back and take her to a more ridiculous place if there ever was a sequel.
I'm like genuinely curious like what happens after that, because I won't spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but my jaw, like I've seen this movie like 5 or 6 times now, and every time I watch it, like that ending still just like gets under my skin. I'm like, this is a really creepy ending, but a really fitting ending. What happens next? Kind of thing. So yeah.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because with me, like with how I approached the first film and that world and the tone that it's set, like sets in or whatever, I don't see that version of it carrying on. Like, I ended the movie there because I really wasn't interested in, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, in showing, like, the next step to me is the police show up and arrest her. And I'm like, I didn't want that to be the last thing we saw of her. I kind of thought that was implied, but I know a lot of people are like, they want it to go on. And so it's funny, years later, I've talked to my other co-writers and said, like, if I were to approach a sequel, it'd be like, from a totally different mindset, because to me, like, that story is over, but it could be brought back in a totally ridiculous way. Kind of how Chainsaw did it with the sequel, like, totally different tone, almost a totally different type of film.
Yeah, slashers are, like, notorious for having a lot of those sequels that are extremely unnecessary.
Yeah.
And you just need to kind of have self-contained, like you said, like, Texas Chainsaw is a great, tonal shift from, you know, being this, like, really, this, like, film that's, like, really grimy and, like, disgusting. You feel like you need a shower after you watch it, 'cause it just gets under your skin. Then you watch the second one, and it's, like, surprisingly, like, fun, and it has, like, just a lot of, like, really black comedy to it. And I, as a fan of the film, would want to see a sequel to it, because I feel like it stands so well on its own, and it has this self-contained character journey that I think a lot of people can click with. And it's one of those rare films that, like, in the horror genre, I wouldn't say rare, because I feel like we get them more and more nowadays, but it's detailed and it's layered and it takes its time to unpack its character.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that's why it was never our intention for it to carry on, and how I see it really being the end of her, even though we don't literally show her being hauled off to jail. I feel like that reminds me, honestly, of, like, the Soska sisters' American Mary, which I really loved. And how I remember hearing them talk about why they, if you haven't seen this, spoiler alert, she gets killed at the end of the film, and they were like, they explained how that, why they did that, and they were like, we wanted this to just be her film and it not to carry on, and I respect that a lot.
I really love it. And so, like, we've talked on and off over the years, podcasting and just kind of talking about film in general. And one of the things that you have is, like, you have an appreciation and affinity for the slasher genre, and for Texas Chainsaw in particular. Can you kind of talk about work being a part of a documentary that explores the legacy of such a genre-changing film?
Yeah, I mean, when I was asked to be part of this documentary, I was, like, just geeked the hell out. I was like, whatever I can do to be a part of this, oh, my God. Yeah, and it's going to be part of, actually, a Second Sight Films, which is a boutique out of UK, boutique label like Arrow. They're putting out a new version of Texas Chainsaw, and this will be a special feature on it. But it's a feature-length documentary. It was actually supposed to premiere last week at Fantastic Fest, but got pulled last minute. I'm very sad. I still haven't seen it. I've only seen the trailer. But I mean, I was so geeked out. And yeah, growing up, I started watching horror probably at like 8, 9 years old. Definitely too early, but slashers were one of the main subgenres I really, really like clung on to. I think it was because it had like an element of fun, and I always loved the kills. But growing up, my like taste got much more deep. But it's interesting to me, like, a lot of those originals, like the classics you bring up, especially Chainsaw and Halloween, I feel like the ones from the 70s really have a different feeling to them. They stand alone. Like, you know, neither of those filmmakers meant to turn that into a franchise or ever wanted to.
Yeah.
It's the 80s that made them do it, pretty much. And then, you know, the other ones like Friday and Nightmare, which I think Nightmare is on another level than Friday, if I'm going to start debating things. But, yeah. But you know, those were made to be franchised, like boom, 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 boom. So it's kind of a different intention. Like Chainsaw and Halloween were independent films that ended up turning into these like things they could have never imagined and were never intended to be. Which I think is awesome. Like, a lot of times the franchise is, like, demanded by the fan base. It's like it was never intended by the filmmakers.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, not only, like, do you talk, like, 70s are just, like, another beast on its own because, like, stepping outside the slasher genre, I mean, you have movies like Last House on the Left, I Spit on Your Grave, Jumping Back In, Black Christmas. There's just such a, grittier is, like, a great word. Like, I rewatched Last House on the Left a couple months ago, and felt like I needed a shower afterwards. Like, I had seen it once, and I was like, I'll never watch it again. Then I got asked to do a podcast on it, and I was like, all right, I'll break my rule and come back. But, like, yeah, it is such a hard watch.
That is not, yeah. That and then, I mean, Wes Craven, the beginning of his, like, Hills Have Eyes and Last House on the Left are so upsetting and so, they have that, Chainsaw has the that same feeling that it gives you, that it's like, you were there, like, yeah. It's, and I feel like especially with Last House, the way it's filmed, like, it almost puts you in the position like you're one of those in that group of fucking freak rapist molesters. Yeah. So it really, man, I don't even know if I own Last House, and I don't even know if I've ever gotten to the end of it.
The ending is kind of satisfying, yeah. Because, like, vengeance is taken, but it's a brutal road to get there.
What I do think is interesting, though, about Craven's career is how, like, the 70s he made these, like, super gritty, fucked up movies with, like, sexual violence, all kinds of shit going on. Then we go to, like, Nightmare on Elm Street. Then we go to the 90s with Scream. Like, what an incredible, like, fucking career. I mean, it's insane.
So being a part of this documentary, I always love to ask, because you talked about, like, how these sequels were, like, never intended to be. For those of you guys that don't know, like, Tobe Hooper essentially got, like, cornered into basically, like, if you want to make these movies, you have to give us Texas Chainsaw 2. And so that kind of spun off, and we've now gotten lots of sequels, including earlier this year with Netflix's new adaptation of it. How do you feel about the sequels as a fan of the franchise?
This is a can of worms here. I don't even know where to begin. I was saying this recently, I feel like it's one of the most, like, remade ones, because it's not as, like, sequeled, like, you know, Friday's up to part whatever the fuck at this point. And they try to keep this continuous story where Chainsaw's, like, continually redone, or, like, a sequel from the original's been done now twice with 3D, and then this new, the Netflix one is straight off the first one. It's just gotten so silly at this point. Some of them I enjoy certain aspects about it, and I can have fun and not, like, get too crazy as a fanatic of the original. I mean, if I was, like, supposed to seriously critique some of the sequels, I get very pissed off. Like, especially the Leatherface, the one they called Leatherface, that was him as, like, a teenager, and I can't even start with that one, because it's like they mislead you to think it's the other kid the whole time, and then you learn it's this pretty boy, and I'm like, okay, stop. This is, Leatherface never came from here, and he was never a pretty boy in a mental hospital. He was never anywhere but this house in the middle of nowhere. Where do I even begin? But yeah, I mean, I think 2 is fun.
The first Leatherface.
The 3 Leatherface. Yeah. Is something interesting. I do enjoy it. I got to meet the director and production designer recently. Then we've got fucking Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger, fucking wild shit. And then the remake with Jessica Biel, I remember when that first came out and I was bummed. And then I really liked the beginning, the prequel to that one. I think just because it was so fucking gory. And Arlie, what's his fuck, is fucking the greatest. Why can't I think of his name?
Oh, I'm terrible with names, so you're asking the wrong person.
From Full Metal Jacket. But they've just, what upsets me about, like, the more from Jessica Biel remake and on, is, you know, they've made Leatherface this, like, hulking, more like Jason. Like, he's, like, running around and wants to murder everybody, and, like, I feel like that's not, you know, that's not the spirit of, like, the original character. The original guy was, like, cowering all the time and just being told what to do. Like, he doesn't have his own motivations, I feel like, at all in the original. Like, he doesn't want to kill people unless he has to, because they've told him to feed his family. It's like, it's like out of like in like need really than just than want.
Well, to quote Grandpa Simpson, which was the style at the time, because I mean, Michael Myers wasn't like also like a hulking person, yeah. And like they kind of transformed him into that. Like, there's that scene where from like Rob Zombie's 2007, where he's like walking down the hallway and like the right before it like gets into like the remake portion of it, and he's just like towering over the two guards, and it's like, nah, man, Michael Myers was like petite like me, he was small like us.
Yeah. He was wildly immortal for being a human. What I like about Michael is at some point he just turns into a monster magically. He's not human anymore and can't be killed. Oh, man, I love it.
Cult of Thorn, man, and it's a wild time to be alive.
But they do all have to eventually, like through the sequels, yeah, become bigger and more like wrestlers that just smash everybody.
See, this is why the stylist can never have a sequel, because it'll be completely like she just keeps coming back, you know, like through the power of like hair gods.
No offense, Najjar, I love you, but we'll have to find like a female wrestler who's huge for one of the sequels to just be like going around picking up people and smashing them. Yes.
So I know a little bit about the projects you're currently working on. I don't know if you want to put it out there. I don't want to if you don't want to. So, but Black Mold, since there's officially press out there, this is a film that has been 10 years in the making, and it's interesting because like it's also has some of the crew members and some of the people that came alongside you and made the stylist. Can you kind of talk about flipping positions?
Yeah, it's almost all the main team from Stylist, so it's like almost anything that they all want to make, I want to be a part of, because I just love them all so much. But the director John Pata, he edited the Stylist, so we've worked real close together forever. And I know this is a film he's been trying to make for a while, and he's been. In fact, when I first met him, he had directed his first feature, and he hasn't since made a feature. He made another short, but he's been like editing everyone else's films for the last few years, and I know he was just like dying to get back behind the camera as a director. So it's exciting. I'm like on board helping it produce, and I actually did hair on the film, which is funny because I do hair still in a salon, but I've never done it on a movie until now. And that was actually really helpful because I've produced other directors, and I like that because I like the logistics and figuring out how to solve situations. But being a hairstylist was even more interesting because it was like to be in a different part of the crew and just to have that perspective of like seeing everything go down from over here rather than over there. And I was like, okay, I'm learning a lot and like how to prepare certain things or communication between teams. It's just, it was really interesting and good to be, I feel like, just to do hair on a movie to understand what that was like. But I'm excited for it. It's like another kind of like psychological thriller horror combo about this photographer. She has like landed her dream exhibit and she photographs abandoned buildings. So her and her homie go out and she's like got access to this place she's never been able to get into, and shit just fucking totally goes downhill once they go in this building, basically. It's pretty, I'm pretty excited about it coming out.
You sold me already. It's fine. So I'm curious about, like, you mentioned that this is the first film that you worked on as far as like hair goes, and one of the things that, like, because I'm a nerd and I'm a cinephile, so like I love production design. Can you kind of talk, as a hairstylist, can you kind of talk about the, I don't want to say issues, but I guess challenges of keeping continuity?
Yeah. Oh, my God. That is so much, because you're shooting from, it's interesting, people that, yeah, don't make films, you don't know all these crazy things that go into how you, yeah, you plan, like, just your days. In fact, even on stylists, because the hair is huge in our movie with it being about hair, and you really like depending on what the character might go through in a day is how you would order how you're going to shoot, because say this character is going to be soaking wet in a scene or bloody or whatever it might be. But I learn, I know I've talked to hairstylists about this on my films, but to do it myself and to break down the whole film, because essentially these characters are like going through a lot in the movie, and I like kind of decide their looks in phases, so I would know, because we're not we don't shoot in order ever, so there'd be days where I'm like, this scene's from like the beginning of the movie, and then in the middle of the day we're gonna be shooting something from the end of the movie where her hair should be way fucked up and greasy and whatever. So all that really is connected to even how we, like the assistant director decides to schedule the day. But this was interesting because there is, I brought up the wet thing, the characters do go out in the rain at one point, and I was even just learning how to kind of make an actress's hair look soaking wet through like a whole scene, which we shoot for like a whole day, but you don't really want them to be wet, was just like cool to learn, like. And I was proud of, like, oh, her hair really looks wet. It's just, like, soaked in baby oil and shit. But, yeah, and I was taking all the pictures and keep, yeah, it's a lot to keep track of. You have to put a lot of trust in every department because of, yeah, the continuity. And one thing gets messed up, and we've all done it. Like, it's happened on my film, stuff that we're, like, because there's just so many moving pieces. Even you got everyone watching for stuff, and still this shit still somehow happens, like, I should totally call out a mistake in the stylist. There's a scene near the end where she's, it's like kind of like her last straw. She's calling Bria Grant's character to like reach out one last time before like totally falling off the fucking deep end. And the husband to be answers instead. She's pacing in the kitchen and this key that shouldn't be there is in the background, but we just like pulled all the color out of it and like made it almost invisible. But it's something that's like a huge thing. She like, you know, throws it in the cellar. It's like this big moment in the movie where she gets rid of it. And we're like, how do we not notice this fucking keys in the background of the scene? And it shouldn't be there. Like all of us are there staring at this. And it's, yeah. Continuity is a pain in the ass. It takes like a gang of people to be paying attention.
So like now, like working from like a technical aspect of like doing continuity, how does that affect like future projects that you're going to be pursuing as a director, whether that is a feature or a short?
I don't know if it'd be much different because I am pretty crazy about planning. Like we sat down with my hairstylist on the stylist, Courtney Jones. She's incredible. I feel like someone like her doesn't get the kind of credit she should. On Black Mold, the hair is very simple. On Stylist, she was like changing Najara's hair like 5 times a day when she's got like 20 minutes to like make her look like a totally different like part of the film. I mean, she was one of the biggest factors in her plans with our making the schedule for every single day. So like I know how important that stuff is to plan out like as early as possible, and then to bring people on you can trust that we're gonna like be prepared and like know what the heck is going on every day.
So just out of curiosity, like coming back into the stylist, many people may or may not know this, but the film's one of the lead actresses in this is Bria Grant, as you mentioned, and since this she's kind of gone off and directed other films like Lucky, which is well worth your time if you go get a chance to. And then 12 Hour Shift is also an awesome black comedy. But because she would have been, like, potentially starting to work on those projects either, like, right before or, like, right after, was there ever kind of, like, an apprenticeship? Or, like, did you show her things on the stylist? Or did she ask things?
Like, for me, asking, since she's so experienced, is that what you mean?
Well, she's experienced as an actress. Like, I've been seeing her movies since 2009. Yeah. So it's like, but also, like, jumping into, like, you know, like, two, like, just right off the bat with 12 Hour Shift and Lucky. Like, I'm like, this girl has to have been, like, studying, like, other directors to create something, like, this impressive to have, like, right out the gate is, like, debut features.
She well, it's a much smaller film people don't know about, but she made another film before those, probably 10 years ago now called, oh, I'm going to fuck this up. It's a, like, it's a, I don't remember what it's called, but it's a road, like a road movie. It's not a horror movie. It's like just a comedy, and that she raised all the money on Kickstarter for. So she's been, I think, behind the scenes longer than people realize, especially writing. Like, she's been writing for shows forever. She's been writing for a show, a couple shows on Netflix for quite a long time. Like, she helped write a script is how I first met her through this other project years ago. So I think that's kind of been her goal for a while. And with Stylus, it was like, if she could do it, was a matter of, did it fit around her schedule? Everything, like you're saying, I think she had just like made Lucky in 12-hour shift right in the same year before The Stylist, because we shot The Stylist and then the world totally shut down. Essentially, it was right before March of 2020. But yeah, her career has gotten crazy. I'm so like so excited for her, and even since then, she's got another one. Oh my God, why can't I think of it? The Country.
Oh yeah, yeah.
The Country Singers, and I just watched it.
Yeah.
Torn Hearts. And I just saw her in Austin a week ago, and she's told me like she's really just not focusing on acting anymore. Like, it's that's really her focus is you know, writing and directing. The Stylist is the last thing she acted in. I was like, she joked that she's like, maybe I'll never act again. And she's like, The Stylist was my ended my career. And we were, I'm like, that doesn't sound good. When we're just laughing about it. But yeah, I mean, she's such a smart. If anything, I felt it was the opposite. I was like very intimidated by her experience, and you know, like you said, like I've seen her in shows since I was like so young, before I've ever even thought I'd make movies, like Heroes and Dexter. And when I first had the chance to meet her, I was just like nervous, like some like a fangirl. Like
I feel that. Can you so like with bringing on her, like it's interesting because like Najara is
hi
hello. Perks of doing live podcasting. Najara was in the feature that the Stylist was based on, and I don't know if I ever asked you, but like, what when you guys were casting for Olivia, what were some of the qualities that you guys were looking for in terms of like someone that could be a friend but also kind of be like this antagonistic force that Najara kind of battles with in the movie?
Was interesting because I didn't want her to act to play it like an antagonist, because she's really not at all a bad person or a negative character to me at all. Wait, I should start over. What the hell was I saying?
I can catch you down. It was
the questions about Bria. And the character.
Yeah, about her, like, what was kind of, like, the casting process? What were you guys looking at specifically
with
Olivia?
Yeah, it's interesting. I never thought of her as the antagonist. Kind of think of Claire as, like, she's her own antagonist battling herself. But I wanted certain moments to feel like she was being mean, only because we were pulled so far onto Claire's side at that point that we're almost delusional like her. Like, the viewer will be viewing things like she does.
Yeah.
In a very like irrational way. Like, there's scenes where I feel like Olivia's character is just establishing boundaries that are pretty normal and should be, but to Claire it's like she's saying, I hate you, never speak to me again. And so I felt like Bria in her real character, a real person, embodies a lot of what Olivia was to me, like someone who is like friendly and sweet and outgoing, but also like a strong person who's not like a pushover, who like asserts themselves. Because I think there's this stereotype of like a woman who is, if she's like bubbly and friendly, then she's then she can't also be strong. And I was like, I know a million women like that, and that's how I wanted that character to be. So I feel like she embodied a lot of what she was in real life. So like, part of it was, I'm like, am I cheating? Because I think of Bria so much like Olivia. But it was once I met Bria through this other project called Permanent Address that we never got to make. But I was like, ever since that, I just kept picturing her in the role. And I didn't say anything till we got serious about, like, we're going to do a Kickstarter and actually make this thing, like, ASAP. And, yeah, she was perfect for it. And the I feel like the chemistry between Najjar and Bria's characters, like, that awkward parking deck scene I'm talking about, you know, at that point, Claire's become very stalkery. And, I mean, Olivia doesn't even know the extent of it, but it's still, like, way too much. And so in that scene, I feel like it feels heartbreaking and mean, but really she's doing what most people should do in that situation. Like, okay, you've gone way too far. You need to take a step back.
Yeah, boundaries are important in relationships. Yeah. But one of the things that
I'm learning myself.
yeah, boundaries are really important. And, like, I don't know. The movie, I feel like, hit, like, there are certain aspects of, like, Claire's character, like, where I've been, like, I've misread situations like this in the past, or, like, even, like, seeing it through Olivia's eyes, where I'm, like, planning a wedding is one of the biggest headaches, but, like, most rewarding times, and so it's kind of, like, you have that tension, plus, like, also, like, like, work being kind of what it is, and it's kind of, like, attention's real.
Yeah, we wanted that, like, the tension of what's going on in her life and Claire's situation crumbling to you know, clash as much as it could.
Well, I think it works. I'm excited to see this next one, Black Mold. I'm excited to kind of see, because I know you're a hairstylist by trade, but, like, I've never been able to actually see any of your hairstyles. So I'm excited to see it for that, and kind of also see what the team behind the stylist is getting ready to do next.
Yeah, and the producers, my producers that I work with a lot, Robert Stern and Sarah Sharp, who are also, Sarah's the production designer and Rob is the DP on all these films, they have another film that just hit Shudder not too long ago called Revealer that people should check out. That is a totally different film. Have you seen it?
Revealer is in my top 10 of the year.
Oh, awesome.
I've seen
the team behind that.
I have I've been emailing with the director of that movie for, like, the last 3 months to, like, schedule out something. We're like, all right, it's going to happen in July, and then, like, life got in the way, and then now it's like, they're like, well, we have a, we're coming to VOD, let's schedule something around this. So, yeah, Revealer is incredible. I was blown away by Revealer. I was like, I don't really know what to expect. I just hit play on my screener link and came back. I was like, this is fun, but it's, like, also, like, creepy, and, like, it does, like, character development really well, and it just looks gorgeous.
Hell yeah, that's Robert and Sarah can do anything. And they shot that, like, in August of 2020, when barely shooting had began during COVID, and I know it was a crazy ordeal to be able to shoot during that. Like, no one could leave where they, you know, they all stayed in the same hotel. No one could go anywhere, even, like, run to the gas station, get tested every, you know, twice a day, which even still on Black Mole, we were all tested, like, was it, like, every other, at least three of the 5 days a week. It was a lot. I mean, whatever you got to do to be able to create stuff again.
Yeah, welcome to the new world order that we've established. Yes. Here. Well, I'm really excited to get to see the documentary, the Legacy of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm interested in seeing where you fit into the larger narrative of that. I'm excited to see Black Mold, and Shudder and Arrow right now have the stylus streaming. So, but people should also buy the Blu-ray, because Blu-ray is really interesting, because it not only comes with the movie, but it comes with the score, which I thought was really, really fascinating. Was that your idea, or was that something that Arrow pitched to you?
It was their idea, and it's not to be correcting, but it's the soundtrack, because we have the score is released on vinyl separately. Like, you know, the songs, which the songs are kind of harder to hear, except for the ones in the dance club, but we've got songs playing in the background of, like, coffee shops and the salon. But they, you know, like, it was a dream to release with someone like Arrow because they, you know, they take such good care of, like, the physical product and they love the special features. We were already making, like, behind-the-scenes stuff and didn't know if it was going to, like, have a home. But with the soundtrack, we were like, this will be awesome because it was also another way for us to give back to those people who gave us those songs for very little. And so it was a way for us to, like, actually give them more money and, like, because, like, we paid for per, like, unit of, like, every song. So essentially, like, we were able to pay these people back. Well, most of the songs were favors. So, I mean, with films of this size, you gotta get every favor and every friend in your movie in some way or another.
This is so accurate. And I know when Black Mold will be coming out to kind of start its festival run. But can you kind of give the listeners at home when they'll be able to see this film that you have now teased?
We are aiming for film festivals early next year. We're still, like, editing, starting sound, so we'll see. I finally got to see the first cut of it myself. I'm lower on the totem pole on this one. I'm not seeing, like, every cut, but so I know we're really close to, like, locking it in.
That's awesome. All right, well, with that, of course, people are going to want to know where they can hear more about the movie, follow your festival run, and that would be social media. That's where I can be able to follow you.
At Black Mold Film, or me at Jill Six. I am also the one running the Black Mold social account, so that's my thing. I'm good at that. That's part of my job on the film, too. That's part of my producer jobs.
Well, hey, that's awesome. So I thank you, and also keep you guys' eye out on the second site social media as well for when their pre-order for their Texas Chainsaw Massacre set goes up. And go check out the stylist if you haven't done it. Hopefully we didn't ruin any of the plot too much. Well, we teased it just enough to where you guys want it from. Jill, I thank you.
Thank you so much.
How would you guys like to help us get mental health resources into schools, conventions, and other events? Well, now you can. Simply go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains for as little as $1 a month. You guys can help us get mental health resources into current and upcoming generations, educate, and break down stigma surrounding mental health, suicide, and depression. And you get exclusive content that you can't get anywhere else. And you guys can tell us which Nicolas Cage movie you want us to cover, and we'll do it. All it takes to get started is to go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains, or simply click the link in the episode description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this episode. Pick your tier and get started today. Yes, it's that simple. So quickly select the tier that you want and help us get hope into the hands of the depressed and the suicidal today.